finishing. All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we're picking up in Parshas Vayechi, and there's an incredible, again, in all of these Parshas of Bereishis, just an incredible amount of dynamic, riveting action. So specifically, I want to draw your attention to a detail which is very often absorbed in the greater narrative. It's not one of the most dramatic details of the Parsha, but as you're going to see, it's quite emotional and quite overwhelming. So the pasuk begins as follows, the section begins as follows, in number one. Vayi acharei advarim ha'ele, vayomer li Yosef, hinei avicha chola. So remember, again, at this point in time, Yosef HaTzadik is viceroy in Egypt. He has resettled his entire family to be in Goshen, and ultimately sustaining them through regional famine and beyond. Yosef gets word that his father is ill. He takes his two sons to see his father, recognizing that his father's time is limited, and therefore, again, in an ultimate effort to try to get a bracha for his children before his father's passing. So Yaakov Avinu hears that Yosef has come to visit him. He gathers his strength and he sits up on the bed. Now this in and of itself was a dramatic display, because under normal circumstances we are used to children engaging in behaviors which honor their parents. Yet here we see that Yaakov, although at an advanced age, is actively trying to be mechabit his father. Rashi HaKadosh points out this idea that Yaakov Avinu has incredible respect for the position that his son Yosef occupies. Yosef is the viceroy. Yosef is the second most influential man in the civilized world, not just in Egypt. And as such, Yaakov feels an obligation to honor him. Vayomer Yaakov Yosef, kel So Yaakov Avinu begins a very interesting narrative. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to me in Luz, in the land of Canaan, blessed me. Vayomer Elai, hineni mafrecha v'rbisicha, unisaticha lekalmim, v'nasati esaretz azosel zaracha acharecha, achuzas olam. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me the bracha. What was the bracha? The bracha is that I'm going to have a large number of offspring, I'm going to have a beautiful family, and I'm going to be given Eretz Yisrael as an achuzas olam, an everlasting portion. Va'ato, shnei banecha nolid dem lecha ba'eretz em ad ba'u yelech mitzrayimo, li'ein, Ephraim u'mnashe, Keruvein v'shimon yihiyuli. And it's at this point in time that Yaakov gives Yosef his bechora. In Yaakov Avinu's perfect vision of life. We all have that perfect vision of life. That perfect vision? The one that never materializes. So with that perfect vision of life, so Yaakov married Rachel. That was his first wife. Leah was not in the picture, just married Rachel. And Yosef was the Bechor. Yosef was the firstborn, and whatever number of children HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have given him from Rachel, that would have been it, and that would have been the happy, normative life. So at the end of the day, Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef, I just want you to understand, you're my Bechor. Reuven's my Bechor. Yehuda has an element of being a Bechor in certain ways. Levi is a Bechor in certain ways. But Yosef, you are my Bechor from my chosen wife. You are my Bechor from the woman I wanted to marry. And as such, as the Bechor, you are entitled to Pishnayim. You remember, biblically speaking, the firstborn gets a double portion of inheritance. How does Yosef receive his double portion? Yosef is fabulously wealthy. He has more money than he'll ever know what to do with. So what's his pishnayim? What's his double portion? That his one shevet becomes two. His one tribe becomes two. Ephraim u'menashe keruvein v'shimon yihiyuli. Your sons will be reckoned like the tribes of Israel. There's no Shevet Yosef. Instead, again, there's a Shvatim of Menashe and Ephraim. And then Yaakov Avinu just adds an additional detail, that if you happen to have more children after today, those children will be subsumed under the umbrellas of, or I should say, the tribal umbrellas of their brothers. So meaning, I'm only giving you two tribes, but any other children you have will be part of Menashe and Ephraim. Fine. Beautiful, dramatic episode. Remember, again, this is where Yaakov ultimately goes ahead and also gives a bracha to Menashe and Ephraim. This parsha, of course, is a dramatic parsha that serves as the basis for the way we bless our children to this very day. But then Yaakov Avinu says something that is seemingly and dramatically out of place. And this is the underlined pasuk in number one. Va'ani bivo'imi padon meso alai Rachel be'eretz kinan baderech. Then Yaakov Avinu says, you know, when I was coming back from Padan Aram, when I was coming back from the house of Lavan, Rachel died in Eretz Canaan, but by Derech. She died on the road. Remember again, Rachel Avinu dies in the midst of childbirth and giving birth to Binyamin. Both give Rasa Aretz, Lovo Efrasa, when there was still a stretch of land to come to Efrat, Vek Berah Sham Bederech Efrat, he based Lachem. And I buried her on the pathway, on the road of Efrat, on the way to Beis Lechem. And the obvious question is, why is this here? Meaning, what does, remember again, that's why I wanted to give you the entire section. The entire section is talking about what Yaakov Avinu was dying, and essentially, again, he's giving his last will and testament to his son. He's accepting Yosef, he is affirming Yosef. You know, this is not our topic for today, but it is quite interesting, and to give you some food for thought, in terms of the dynamic between Yosef and his brothers and Yaakov, after the family is reunited. You know, we love this story in last week's parasha. Ani Yosef, Odavichai, I'm still alive, everyone lives happily ever after. You know that when families experience trauma or severe dysfunction, so in general, no one really ever lives happily ever after. They live happily, they live ever after, just not happily ever after. So it's interesting to note, which the Torah is really silent on it, in terms of, you know, you have wondered to yourself, did Yaakov Avinu ever ask Yosef, by the way, how did you get here? How did you get here? Don't get me wrong. I'm happy you're alive. I'm proud that you're the viceroy. I'm proud that you've been in Egypt for 22 years and still maintain fidelity and allegiance to the Abrahamic values. But how did you wind up here? So the reason I'm bringing this up is because I'll just point out that if you'll notice, the way the section begins, it's Vayagid Yaakov, Vayagid Yaakov, Vayomer li Yosef, Hinei Avicha Chole. Yosef was told that his father was ill. What's intriguing about that?
Why wouldn't he know?
Meaning, we would assume after being separated from his beloved father for 22 years, Yosef would have been inseparable. So suddenly Mefarshim bring down the idea that Yosef was very, very careful to never be alone with his father. Why? Because he never wanted to be asked that question, which was, how did you get here? Tell me the story. What happened? Because Yosef couldn't lie. And Yosef did not want to indict his brothers. The family was finally together. You know what the most important thing, Family Dynamics 101, is shallow peace. Superficial shalom is better than no shalom at all. Sometimes peaceful coexistence, even if the family is not tight, even if the family doesn't love each other so much, but if everybody could smile and everybody could nod and everybody could tolerate being around each other, take my word for it. It's a big accomplishment because most families can't even get that together. Yosef finally has his mishpacha together. And as such, again, he does not want to rock the boat. Now his father's dying. Yosef has to come. Yaakov solidifies Yosef's place in the family. This was a dramatic moment because remember again, the brothers sold Yosef. Under the pretense that what? That Yosef was an outlier. He wasn't part of the family. He was trying to destroy everything. His visions are false. His aspirations are false. He is the Ishmael. He is the Esav. We are the perpetuators of our father's legacy. We stay. He goes. How do we know if the brothers were right or wrong? So the answer is, the fact that Yosef was alive and that he thrived and that he prospered, that's fine. But remember again, he was thriving and prospering for Egypt. It's here that Yaakov Avinu says, you were right. You were right. You are my continuity. Not only that, you're double your brothers. Your brothers each represent one tribe, you become two tribes. A dramatic, dramatic moment where Yosef's position in the family, almost as the Bechor, as the actual Bechor, is solidified. This is where Yosef is vindicated. This is where Yosef realized that it's not just simply that his dreams were correct, that we already saw before, but it's that his aspirations, his desire ultimately again to be a driving force in the family, were correct. Beautiful. Except when Yaakov Avinu introduces this additional piece of information in Pasuk Zayin, leaves us wondering why. Why are you bringing up the death of Rachel Imenu. Why are you bringing this up now? Why is it being mentioned now? Now, the truth is, the question itself is actually a bit compounded. Why is it a bit compounded? Because burial was spoken about. Where was burial spoken about? In the beginning of Parashas Vayechi, where Yaakov Avinu is suffering a decline, he's getting old. And again, in one of the earlier meetings with Yosef, what does he tell Yosef? Unisasani mimitzrayim, I don't want to be buried in Egypt. I want you to take me to the land of Canaan. I want you to take me to Hebron. I want you to bury me in Maras HaMachpelah. So we already spoke about burial. It was already mentioned. And yet, again, here Yaakov feels the need to mention the death of Rachel Imenu. But not just the death of Rachel Imenu, the idea that Rachel wasn't buried in Hebron. Rachel's not buried in Maras HaMachpelah, that she was buried on the side of the road. You know when you see like the old pictures or the old paintings of Kever Rachel. You know, today, you think that Kever Rachel is a city just because of the walls that are built. It looks like a compound. But, you know, when you see the old pictures, I don't just mean that you can see old photographs. Literally, again, Kever Rachel is in the middle of nowhere. It's in the middle of nowhere. Rachel Imenu essentially is buried almost like in an anonymous grave. Obviously, it was marked, but it's not next to anyone, and it wasn't really next to anything. It was mamish on the road. And yet Yaakov Avinu once again feels compelled to mention this again. So really two questions. Number one, why is he mentioning it at all? And number two, why mention it here? So take a look at Rashi, which is a moment. Skip number two, look at number three for just a moment. Rashi says, "Fani bivoyimi padan." So Rashi understands over here, something amazing. The afal pi, number three, first line. The afal pi shani matriach alecha loholicheni lekabre ba'eretz kinan velokach asisi leimecha sheri samoch lebeis lecha mesa. So according to Rashi, Yaakov Avinu is picking up from the previous conversation. In the previous conversation, Yaakov had asked Yosef, please bury me in Eretz Yisrael. Please bury me in Hebron Maras HaMachpelah. So Yaakov Avinu reverts back to that conversation and he says, I know I'm asking you to do something that I did not do for your mother. I know I'm asking you to do something that I myself didn't do for your mother. Kivras Aretz, third line, number three. Velosh Tomar, Baal Tomar, Shikvo La Gisham Me Laolicho Lekar Lechevron, Eisagir Haya, Sha'aretz Chalula Aminu Keves Kekivra. So Yaakov Avinu says, Yosef, I want to be honest with you. The reason, there wasn't anything preventing me from taking your mother, from burying her in Hebron. There was nothing preventing me from taking her to Maras HaMachpelah. It wasn't too hot, it wasn't too cold, it wasn't snowing, it wasn't raining. So let me explain to you why I did what I did. Vek Beresham, number three, four lines up from the bottom. V'lo holechtia afid lebeislechem lachnis al aretz. You know, it didn't even bring her into Beis Lechem to be buried. Remember, again, even the Lashon of the Pasuk over here, Bederech Efrat, he Beis Lechem. She's buried on the road. I didn't even bring her into the city proper. I buried her on the side of the road. Why? V'yadati, now listen to this. V'yadati, Sheyesh Belipcha Alay Ta'aromes. So listen to this. Yaakov says to Yosef, I know that you're bregis with me. I know that you're upset. Sheish belibcha taromes, that means I know that you have complaints against me. Now this, by the way, is an incredible, incredible thing. Did Yosef have complaints against Yaakov? No. But you see what happens when you feel guilty about something. When you feel guilty about something in life, you project. When I feel inadequate about something in life, I project. Yaakov Avinu himself lives with the pain of having buried his wife, his beloved wife, in the middle of nowhere. So Yosef, I know that you must have tainus on me. You must have complaints against me. So let me explain to you why I did what I did. Avadolcha, shapia dibar kvartiyosham. I buried her there purposely. Shetehe leezra libanash shikisheyigla osam nevudzaran. Vayu ovrim derech sham. Yotzisa rachel al kivra ubocha umivakeshes aleha rachamim. So Yaakov Avinu tells Yosef in a moment of prophetic clarity, do you want to know why I buried your mother there on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere? Because right now it's in the middle of nowhere, but there's going to come a point down where that road is going to be a dramatic crossroads. That's when Klal Yisrael and the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed. And we are led out from Eretz Yisrael by the great butcher, Nevuzaradan. Klal Yisrael will pass by Kever Rachel. They'll take that road out of Eretz Yisrael. And at that moment, Rachel Imenu will rise up from her grave, and she will cry, and she will beseech HaKadosh Baruch Hu for divine compassion. Shenemar, Kober Amon Ishma, Rachel Mevaka Al Baneha. Rachel Imenu will cry for her children. VaKadosh Baruch Hu Meshiva, and God responds to her, Yesh Schar Lepula Seich, Rachel, stop crying. I promise that your efforts will be rewarded, Nu'um Hashem, V'shavu Banim Ligvulam. So ultimately, Yaakov Avinu tells Yosef, I know that you're upset at me. I know that you're angry at me. I know that you're disappointed in me. So let me tell you why I did what I did. It wasn't because there was anything preventing me from taking your mother to Maras HaMachpelah. There was nothing preventing me from burying her in Hebron. But this was a calculated decision. A decision that had to be made for the future benefit of Rachel Imenu's children. Because when we are led out into Gaza, when we are led out into diaspora, it is only Rachel Imenu who could cry for us. It is only Rachel Imenu who could beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu for compassion for us. And therefore I needed her to be on the side of the road. Right there to be on site when Klal Yisrael was led out to the dark night of diaspora. But why here? Why mention it here? So I understand if Yaakov Avinu would have mentioned this where? When he was talking to Yosef about burying me in Canaan. So meaning, had Yaakov Avinu said, Yosef, take me to Eretz Yisrael for burial. Oh, and by the way, I know that you might be upset at me, that I'm asking you to do something for me that I didn't do for your own mother. Let me explain to you why I buried your mother in the middle of nowhere. But that's not what happens. Instead, what happens is, Yaakov Avinu asks Yosef to bury him in Eretz Yisrael. That's one, part one. Part two is the bracha to Menashe and Ephraim. And then part three is the explanation of Rachel Imenu's burial in the middle of nowhere. So why is it here? So Rav Schwab comes along and says something dramatically amazing. If you take a look at number four, I apologize, it's on the next page. So Rav Schwab quotes Rashi. Rav Schwab quotes Rashi. So again, if you look in paragraph B, right towards the end of paragraph B, the last four lines of paragraph B. Amnam yikshem shech haksuvim, shim kei makom lehel, kisheshbiu akvura ba'aretz, kinet ba'aretz kinan, v'lo kan achar amru Ephraim nashik ruvim mishimon yuli. So again, Rav Schwab asks our question, right? So Rav Schwab's question, that I understand why this had to be included. I understand that Yaakov Avinu is justifying. Even though I'm asking you to bury me in Eretz Yisrael, and I did not do that for your mother, let me explain to you why I didn't bury her in Hebron. Let me explain to you why I didn't bury Maras HaMachpelah. But why is it here after the bracha to Menashe and Ephraim? And here he says something amazing. Paragraph C. V'nira, sheramaz lo Yaakov inyan Mashiach ben Yosef. So says Rav Schwab in the theme of prophetic revelation that Yaakov Avinu was alluding to Mashiach ben Yosef. Who's Mashiach ben Yosef? Shekiyadua asid lios peiz Mashiachim. There are two messiahs, right? There are two Mashiachs. Mashiach ben Yosef, Yofia mikodem, v'yeharik b'milchames b'milchama, v'acher kach yavo Mashiach mishevet Yehuda. So ultimately, again, the Gemara teaches us that there's Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. You know, often when we speak about Mashiach, the reference is often to Mashiach ben David, but there is an earlier messianic presence. That is Mashiach ben Yosef. Mashiach ben Yosef leads us, whoever the us is, the powers of good, in the war of Gog and Magog, which is that ultimate showdown between good and evil, and Mashiach ben Yosef loses his life in that war. But it is that war in which good triumphs over evil, which paves the way for absolute messianic redemption, which is accomplished by Mashiach ben David. So Mashiach ben Yosef paves the way for Mashiach ben David. Skipped after the parentheses. Mashiach ben Yosef, yihyeh mishevet Ephraim. Mashiach ben Yosef comes from the tribe of Ephraim. V'haynu d'chsev, v'Ephraim b'chori hu, haben yakir li Ephraim. Paragraph D. V'acher shodia Yaakov liYosef shel Ephraim mishpat habechora v'Ephraim u'Menashe k'ruvim v'Shimon perish Ephraim k'ruvim v'ha bechor Menashe k'Shimon. So interestingly enough, so even in the sons of Yaakov of Yosef, so when we say Menashe and Ephraim k'ruvim v'Shimon, excuse me, Ephraim u'Menashe k'ruvim v'Shimon yuli, Yaakov Avinu is telling Yosef, you are the bechor Yosef, and that you're getting a double portion. But amongst your sons, Ephraim is going to be reckoned as the Bechor. And remember, who comes from Ephraim? Mashiach ben Yosef comes from Ephraim. Listen to how beautiful this is. Ramaz lo, shamashiach sha'asid la'amo b'bnei Rachel, mishevet ra'im shenechshav ha'bachor, yavo kodem Mashiach ben David, beis halachni. See, here's what's amazing. Mashiach ben Yosef, who comes ultimately again from Rachel Imenu, from Yosef, specifically from Ephraim, will come before Mashiach ben David. Where does Mashiach ben David come from? Where does he come from? He comes from Beis Lechem Yehuda. Who comes from Beis Lechem Yehuda? David HaMelech. How? What's his origin in Beis Lechem Yehuda? Rus. Right? Rus marries Boaz. Boaz is the most chashuv person in Beis Lechem Yehuda. Meaning it's called Beis Lechem. Beis Lechem was the city of nobility for Yehuda. So Boaz is from there. Yishai is from there. David's from there. So Mashiach ben David comes from Beis Lechem. But in order for Mashiach ben David to come, what has to happen? Mashiach ben Yosef, who comes from Ephraim, the son of Yosef, the son of Rachel, has to pave the way. Listen to how beautiful this is. Va'amar. Therefore, Yaakov Avinu says, Va'ani, bivo'imi padon, me'sa'alai Rachel, ba'od kivras oretz lavo efrasa, vek beraha sham baderech efrat hi beis lochem. Shenikbira Rachel al Haderech Apia Dibor Lios li Ezra Libaneha Al Yede Hamashiach Shiyamo Mitzatzaha Kodem Boam Lebeis Lachem Makom Yishai Avidavid Mashiach Hashem. So listen to how magnificently beautiful this is. So Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef, I want you to understand something. Your mother, Rachel, is the mother of Mashiach ben Yosef. Your mother is the mother of Mashiach ben Yosef. Mashiach ben Yosef paves the way for Mashiach ben David. So where is Rachel Imenu, who is the mother of Mashiach ben Yosef, buried? Where is she buried? She's buried on the road to Beis Lechem. Who comes out of Beis Lechem? Beis Lechem is Mashiach ben David. Says Yaakov Avinu, the placement of the burial site of your mother is a metaphorical allusion to the fact that she will have a descendant, Mashiach ben Yosef, who will pave the way to Beis Lechem, who will pave the way for the emergence and ultimate arrival of Mashiach ben David. Such a magnificently beautiful metaphor. Your mother is not buried in the middle of nowhere. Your mother is exactly where she needs to be in order to be able to bring about the emergence and revelation of perhaps her greatest descendant, a man whose first name we don't yet know, but who will become known as Mashiach ben Yosef. And why is Mashiach ben Yosef necessary? Because he paves the way to Beis Lechem. He paves the way to Mashiach ben David. He paves the way to ultimate messianic redemption. Ubazeh, look at Rav Schwab, ends, Ubazeh, P.A.S. Yaakov Avinu as Yosef. And through this, Yaakov Avinu was able to appease, or was able to calm Yosef. So an incredibly dramatic idea. So Yaakov Avinu, feeling that Yosef harbors animosity over the anonymous or perceived anonymous burial of his mother, Yosef feeling slighted, feeling slighted for his mother. You know, if there's one thing that's amazing about the Shvatim, and this is true, you see, with all the Shvatim, which is what? They were fiercely protective of the honor of their mothers. Fiercely protective, right? Reuven loses his birthright. Why? Why, you remember? Because he moves the bed. He moves the bed of Yaakov after the death, ultimately again of Rachel, he moves the bed of Yaakov to the tent of Leah, because he can't believe that Yaakov moved his bed to the tent of a maidservant. That's why Reuven loses his Bechorah. He's willing to give up everything to stand up for the honor of his mother. When everybody comes to meet Esav, Yosef, who was a little boy, Yosef was a little boy at that time, stands in front of his mother. He will not let the Rasha Esav cast his eyes upon the beauty of his mother. These boys, these children, were fiercely protective of the honor of their mother. So Yaakov Avinu, although Yosef never said anything, but Yaakov Avinu feels, you must harbor animosity towards me. You know, by the way, not that this is a psychological profile, but I will tell you something very interesting that you have to just keep in mind, which is, for Yaakov Avinu, What's one of Yaakov Avinu's greatest sources of pain? One of his greatest sources of pain? Not having Rachel, absolutely. What else?
Losing Yosef.
There's no shortage what happened to Dina. Remember, Yaakov Avinu did not make it back home in time for his mother's Levaya. Rivka died before Yaakov got back. And by the way, not too long beforehand. Because remember, the Torah tells us that as Yaakov Avinu is on his way back to the familial home, what does the Torah say? Vatamas Devora Meinekes Rivka. Devora, the wet nurse of Rivka, died. And obviously everybody asks, who cares? Who cares? I mean, I don't mean to sound like unfeeling or insensitive, but what does that matter to us? So the Mefarshim bring down that the death of Devora was an allusion to the death of Rivka Imenu. Now, why the death of Rivka Imenu is not mentioned explicitly, the Ramban brings down, do you know why it's not mentioned explicitly? It's interesting. We know about all the death of the other Imos, yet the death of Rivka is not mentioned. Why? The Ramban brings down because she died and was buried pretty anonymously. Yaakov wasn't there. Esav despised his mother for what she did. Yitzchak was blind. So the Ramban brings down that he hired a couple of workers to take the body and bury her. She had no levaya. She had no hespedim. There were no great throngs of people who were assembled for her. And Yaakov missed seeing his mother by a couple of days. So there is a motif here of there is a motif here of the death of matriarchs in unresolved fashions. Yaakov Avinu was not able to be present by the Levaya of his mother. Yosef, by the way, also wasn't present for different reasons. But now his mother is also buried in this anonymous place. And so Yaakov Avinu feels the need to go ahead and explain himself. Let me explain to you, my son, what is happening over here. Your mother is not buried in the middle of nowhere. She's buried where she needs to be buried. Even though right now it looks like mamish on a side of the road, that side of the road is going to become a dramatic stop, both when Klal Yisrael is let out, but also in the future. That placement on the road to Beis Lechem symbolizes the fact that her descendant, Mashiach ben Yosef, will pave the way to Beis Lechem, will pave the way ultimately again for Mashiach ben David. What's the message? So the message that Yaakov Avinu, I think, was trying to convey to Yosef is this idea that there are things in life which cause present pain. Sometimes in life there are situations, there are realities which cause us pain in the present. But those very things which cause present pain sometimes pave the way for future salvation. Sometimes the things that are so very painful for us right now are in fact the very ingredients for ours and future generation salvation in the years to come. Sometimes those things to us that seem so wrong, so hurtful, so upsetting, that lack resolution, are the very things that plant the seeds for salvation in the future. But there's another piece. Take a look at the Sfarno. The Sfarno has a dramatically different understanding of these events. Meisalai Rachel. So first of all, the Sfarno understands this to me a much more personal and raw, emotionally raw discussion between Yaakov and Yosef. So for the first thing the Sfarno says is that Yaakov says to Yosef, Mesa alai Rachel. Even that wording is interesting. Mesa alai Rachel, which literally means what? She died on me. She died on me. Could you say Mesa? What do you mean alai? Look at this Sfarno. It says, Kima amaram zal. Ein isha mesa ela labayla. That the death of a woman is most acutely felt by her husband. By the way, Chazal made this statement both ways, right? Meaning this is between spouses. It's actually an incredibly dramatic dynamic that there are many traumatic losses that can be unfortunately experienced in life, but in the eyes of Chazal, it's almost as if the loss of a spouse is the most traumatic. Why? Because at the end of the day, any other loss, as traumatic as it may be, if a person hopefully has a marriage that is intact, a marriage that is strong, then at least they're not alone in their suffering. It doesn't make it easier. It doesn't make it easier. It doesn't fill the void. But I have someone else, first of all, who shares my pain. I have someone else who is going through the same things, even though no two people experience pain in the same way. But I'm not alone in this dynamic. When a person is widowed, where a person becomes a widower, suddenly again, there is this huge void. There's this huge void. And there's nothing that could fill that void. It doesn't matter, children, grandchildren, friends, it's all beautiful. But at the end of the day, so first thing according to the Sfarno, that Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef, is Yosef, you know, I know that it wasn't easy for you to lose your mother at a young age. And I know that that left an indelible impression upon you. But you know what, Yosef? Baruch Hashem, you grew up, you have a family, you have children, you have a career. Mesa alai, Rachel. I'm empty. I just want you to know, yes, Baruch Hashem, I've got sons and daughters-in-law and grandchildren and beautiful generations and all wonderful, wonderful kinds of things. Mesa alai, Rachel. To this day, when I speak about my Rachel, to this day, when I speak about my beloved wife, I feel that void. I feel that acute emptiness. Ba'od bederach ba'od kiras aris lavoi fras. The second line, number 5. Takeif kishenasasi me'osamakom shahaya davarak shahaya dvarakel yisparach elai ba'odi bederach terem higila beis lechem vekberasha bederach efrat. Fine, so what happens? Listen to this. So Yosef now says the following. Excuse me, Yaakov says the following. I'm in number 5, third line down. V'kol kach gavra alai tirdosi va'avilusi. My mourning, my sadness became so overwhelming that what? Shelo atzarti koach lo lisa lebeisakvaras beislach. This is amazing. What does Yosef say? You see, everyone deals with the same core issue, which is, why does Yaakov Avinu bury Rachel in the middle of nowhere? That's the fundamental question. So we know, we just saw Rashi, prophetically motivated. There's a prophetic motivation over here as to why Yaakov Dafka buries Rachel on the side of the road. You know, there's a simpler pshat, by the way. You know, the Ramban brings down the perhaps what is the simplest idea, which is what? Rachel Yeminu dies in childbirth. She dies in childbirth. As such, the Ramban says there was an incredible loss of blood. It would have been a lack of dignity to Rachel Imenu's body to delay the burial. Therefore, out of deference to her, the Ramban says, pretty much, they buried her on site. They buried her on site. That was the covered amaze that they did. So they're simple. The Sforno says, no. The Sforno says, the truth is, remember again, you know, if you go to Kever Rachel, how far is Beit Lechem from Kever Rachel? I'll take this. You could throw a stone, and many do, from Beit Lechem into Kever Rachel. Right? It's mamish, a stone's throw away. You can't see that because now, like I said, Kever Rachel is like a fortress. But when Mashiach comes and those walls come down, and we once again inhabit the entire area there, you're going to see Kever Rachel is a few steps out of Beit Lechem. It's not far. And there were cemeteries in Beit Lechem. So ask the Sfarno, why don't you just take her into Beit Lechem? Why don't you just take her into a cemetery? Why are you burying her here? So look what the Sfarno says. V'chol kach gavra alai tirdasi ve'vilusi. I was so overwhelmed by my pain. I was so overwhelmed by the loss of my wife. Shelo atzarti koach lo lisa lebeis kvaras beis lechem. I couldn't do it. Do you hear what Yaakov Avinu was saying? I was paralyzed by the pain. I was overwhelmed by the loss. You know, when a person endures loss, the first fundamental question they ask themselves, especially traumatic loss, how will I ever go on? How will I ever go on? And depending on the nature of that traumatic loss, it could be paralyzing. Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef, when your mother died, I had no strength. My strength left me. I didn't even have the ability to take her body just a few steps into Kever Rachel. Vein safek, ki me'az hayalibi chalal bikirbi. Yaakov Avinu says something amazing. He says, you know, from the moment that your mother died, libi chalal bikirbi means what? How would you translate that? Libi chalal bikirbi? I became hollow on the inside. I became hollow on the inside. Velo shalat od bi yetzer hara. V'nechle shata avasi. Velo nishar bi koach lahodid banim. So according to the son, Yaakov Avinu says something dramatically frank and honest with his son. He said, you know, I should have had more children, but after your mother died, I had no desire to be with anyone else. I literally, again, that basic desire for intimacy, that basic desire for physical connection, it left me. When your mother died, I became hollow on the inside. When your mother died, I became bereft to a certain degree of emotion, which, by the way, also helps to understand certain things. You know, Yaakov Avinu saw the incredible strife that was unfolding between his children. So think about it for just a moment. Put yourself in the parental role. You see your kids fighting like this. What would you do? Timeouts, right? Good. Right. Meaning, I'm saying you would intervene in a much more dramatic way. Yaakov Avinu sees this and it begins to make sense. Yaakov Avinu is emotionally spent. I'm spent. And first of all, every parent reaches that moment, right, where they say, you know what? I'm sorry. I literally can't deal with you anymore. I can't deal with you. I'll re-engage in just a little bit, but right now I have no more cough. So for Yaakov Avinu, this is even more dramatic. For Yaakov Avinu, he's saying, when your mother died, and again, the wording of the Sfarno is so profound, kol kach gavra alai tirdasi ve'evilusi. My mourning became so overwhelming and so profound that I died on the inside. I became hollow on the inside. And I didn't even have the strength to take her body to a proper burial place just a few more steps into Beit Lechem. Not only that, my dear Yosef, I could have had more children. Perhaps Yaakov Avinu is lamenting the fact that he did not have a larger family, but I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. There is something about me that died along with your mother. Yaakov Avinu, by the way, I want to point out, according to the Sfarno, you see, the difference is, according to Rashi, Yaakov Avinu is justifying what he did. He is justifying the fact that he buried Rachel in the middle of nowhere. Why? How is he justifying it? It's not the middle of nowhere. It's the middle of nowhere now, but it's going to become a very significant somewhere in the not-so-distant future. According to the Sfarno, Yaakov Avinu is not even doing that. Yaakov Avinu is saying, Yosef, I'm just going to tell you like it is. I'm going to tell you like it is. I couldn't do it. Should I have been stronger? Should I have summoned the strength? Should I have summoned the koach to be able to do what needed to be done to give your mother proper burial? It's possible as I couldn't do it. In that moment, I was a broken man, bereft of strength, bereft of will, and I couldn't do it. Look at number 6 for just a moment. In the Sichos Musar, Reb Chaim Shalevitz takes this a step further, and he says the following. V'yesh lehis bonin bazeh. Let's analyze this a little bit. B'sha'a sheba Yaakov lefayis es Yosef bino, shelo yiyeh belibo alav, lama hutzrach lechol ha'akdamos halalu, v'chi lo day sheyomar lo api adibor haya. So remember again, Reb Chaim Shalevitz says, Yaakov, obviously, you're trying to resolve some type of dynamic with Yosef. You think that Yosef dislikes you. You think that Yosef is upset. Not dislikes you, that's too strong. You think that Yosef is upset with you because of where you buried his mother. So again, you know, here's the great part about being one of the Avos. What's the great part about being one of the Avos? I mean, I guess we wouldn't know. But one of the great parts is that you don't have to explain yourself. And the truth is, if somebody questions your motivations, what could you simply say? It was the will of God. It's always a good answer, right? It was the will of God. But for the Avos, it was true. Meaning, he could have put the whole matter to rest. I mean, obviously, the point that you see over here is that Yaakov feels the need to address this. He feels the need to address this because he feels that it's on Yosef's mind. Now, by the way, the one thing we never know is what? Was it really on Yosef's mind or not? Like, was he thinking about this at all? Did it ever bother him? Did he just accept what Yaakov did because he had trust and he had love for his father? We don't know. But Yaakov clearly felt it was an issue on Yosef's mind and therefore felt the need to address it. Fine, address it. I did the will of God. God is okay with what I did. If God is okay with what I did, then you should be okay with what I did. Hayale al das shadayin ye Yosef choshed shemachmas hagisham nim Yaakov milo lichal beislacham ad shehutzrach olomar ad aisa griha aisa osha tamshin lehu machmas marchik v'tircha. So the point that Reb Chaim Shalevitz says, I don't understand, Yaakov, why do you have to engage in this whole justification? Why the need to go ahead and engage? Just tell Yosef, you gotta trust me on this one. I'm your father. I love you. And I loved your mother more than anything. Trust me on this one. But yet he feels the need to go ahead and address the whole dynamic. Paragraph B. Ella, ha'inyin kachu, e masa nita l'shmas d'var Hashem, Rak bishoshem and narim es kala offer hadavak misaviv. Rak az miskala dvar Hashem kefishus. Rechaim Shlavis goes on, and I'll summarize. Essentially, what he says is that, you know, sometimes the most important thing is to put everything on the table. Sometimes the only way to reach resolution and the only way to reach clarity is to be brutally honest and to put everything on the table. So that's what's happening over here. So in such a dramatic way that if we combine the Sfarno and we combine ultimately again the Sichos and Rechaim Shlavis together, so we really come out with a combined dynamic. What's happening over here? Yaakov Avinu is having a moment of honesty and candor with his child. How do you build meaningful relationships in life? How do you build meaningful relationships in life? A person has to be honest about their frailties and weaknesses. If I want to build a relationship with someone who I love, but I won't acknowledge my frailties, I have no frailties, I have no weaknesses, I have no problems. Because, you know, sometimes people feel that their job in a relationship is to look perfect, that my job is to be the bastion of strength, to be the beacon of optimism, to be perfect, and that I can't allow any chinks in my armor to be viewed. It's not true. First of all, the people who love us also know what? How ridiculously imperfect we are, right? And the people who love us also know all the difficulties and all the challenges we have. But to build honesty in relationship requires an honesty of our faults and of our shortcomings. What's happening over here is something dramatic. In Yaakov Avinu's final moments, what he is telling Yosef is, my dear son, I want to tell you that I had a moment, I've been strong my whole life. You know, Yaakov Avinu was a bastion of strength. Yaakov Avinu was an incredible beacon of strength. Remember, Yaakov Avinu goes through a ridiculous number of life difficulties, challenges, and vicissitudes, and he weathers every single one of them. From the time that he is a young boy until the time that he is an old man, life is one challenge after the next. But what does he tell Yosef? My dear son, I want to tell you there was a moment when I wasn't strong. There was a moment when I broke. There was a moment when I crumbled. There was a moment that brought me to my knees. And it's amazing, by the way. It wasn't Esav. It wasn't the abduction and rape of Dina. It wasn't the sale of Yosef. It wasn't, because again, Yaakov Avinu goes through a ridiculous amount of tzar throughout his life. So when Rachel died, so which is such an interesting thing, when Rachel died, why wasn't he brought to his knees with Dina? What happened with Dina? What happened with Yosef? What happened? We missed it. But you know, sometimes everybody, you know, I'll give you a good mashal that somebody once gave me. You know, you ever get a cup of coffee? So if you notice, if you fill up a cup of coffee, so you could actually fill up the coffee above the rim. You can fill up the coffee above the rim, right? Because the surface tension of the coffee keeps the liquid together. So you could fill up a cup, actually, again, even above the rim of the cup. But what happens? There's that one extra drop. And what happens with the one extra drop? Everything spills over. In life, life is like a cup of coffee, right? It's like Forrest Gump, right? Life is like a cup of coffee. So what do I mean by that? That people could handle a lot. But most of us are handling stuff even beyond the rim of the cup. But there is that one extra drop where I say, you know, I look at that cup of coffee and I say, you know what? If there is one more thing that occurs, I'm out. If there's one more thing that occurs, literally, again, the dam's going to break and I don't even know what's going to happen. Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef, I was always strong. I was always strong. But when your mother died, I couldn't be strong. When your mother died, I couldn't get it together. I'm sorry. I was weak. I knew that I should have taken her into Beis Lechem. If it wasn't going to be a Maras Machpelah, because for whatever the reason, there's not enough, whatever the Metzias is, I could have taken her somewhere better. I could have buried her in a place that was more Mechubad. But I'm being honest with you. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. So Yosef, why am I sharing this with you now? Because, my dear Yosef, I am about to die. And our family relationship, the entire greater mishpacha relationship, has always been so strained. And do you know why our family relationship has always been so strained? Because we've never had honest dialogue, all of us. Because we all had different agendas, and we all had anger and animosity, and we always let it simmer beneath the surface. By the way, if you remember again, if you look, remember the dialogue between Yosef and his brothers. What was the dialogue? Yosef tells the dreams. What do the brothers say? Right? Hamaloch timloch alinu, you're going to rule over us? They get upset about the dreams. Right? That is the only exchange we see between Yosef and his brothers. So remember again, this is the beginning of Parashas Vayeshev. We've never seen Yosef and his brothers talk. We see one verbal exchange by the dreams. The next thing that happens to Yosef and his brothers is what? They throw him in the pit. They sell him. Wow. What a jump. It's not such a jump. Because when animosity and anger and resentment simmers beneath the surface, and people don't put their baggage on the table to deal with it, it takes on almost a volcanic nature. So that when they see Yosef approach them, what is Yosef coming to do, by the way? When he's coming out to the field, what is he coming to do? What is he coming to do? I'm testing you. This is Chumash 101, people. Right? What is he coming to do? He's coming to check on his brothers. He's coming to see, can I get you something? He's coming to help them. Yaakov Avinu says, Lech ura'ei, yishlom achecha. Why don't you go see how your brothers are doing? Young Yosef is coming to ask his brothers, can I do something for you? And what do they say? They don't even give him a chance to open his mouth. Hinei balach halomos ala zabai leinu. Ah, the dreamer's coming. And they're so filled with anger, and they're so filled with resentment, that they throw him into the pit. And there's not even a verbal exchange. You don't even see Yosef saying, what are you doing? Or the brothers say nothing. There's no words. There's no dialogue. There's no conversation. There's no airing of grievances. There's nothing. Instead, all there is anger, resentment, and animosity that builds day after day after day until it results in the most treacherous familial betrayal we have in the entire Chumash. And say, Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef, I can't leave the world like this. I can't leave the world like this. I have to put everything on the table. And even though putting everything on the table is an admission of guilt on my part, and even though putting everything on the table represents me making myself vulnerable by telling you about my faults, and by telling you about my failures, and by telling you about my difficulties, but my dear son, if we're going to have a meaningful relationship, then at the end of the day, I have to be honest with you about my failures and about my frailties. If we're going to have a meaningful relationship, I have to put everything on the table. I know, Yosef, you have never said anything to me about harboring any kind of animosity or ill will for where I buried your mother, but I feel that you may be harboring it on the inside. And my beloved son, as a family, we've all harbored too much stuff on the inside. So if you're not going to say it, I'll be your mouthpiece. I'll say it for you. You're upset at me. You're disappointed in me. You feel like I slighted the kavod and the honor of your mother. You say, why couldn't you just give her this kavod acharon after everything she did for you, after she waited for you, after she gave her sister, she did everything for you, and you couldn't even bring her to a normal burial? I know you're upset at me. So I'm going to own it. And I'm going to tell you, my beloved son, that I failed. I failed her. I failed you. I failed myself in that moment. But I could just tell you, in that moment, I didn't have the strength to do anything other than I did. But at least what I want to do now is be honest with you. Put it on the table so that at least we could have an open and honest dialogue. But more importantly, a beautiful and meaningful and enduring relationship. So it comes out that ultimately, again, in this little pasuk, Yaakov Avinu teaches us, Yosef Azadik teaches us three incredibly dramatic and dynamic lessons. Lesson number one is that sometimes the things in life which cause present pain pave the way for future salvation. Sometimes you have to live with an emuna, and this is an emuna, that even those things that hurt us now, even those things that are difficult for us now, you know, we believe in Gamzul Tov, that everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is somehow some way for the best. Even those things that hurt now may be the very samplings of future redemption. Lesson number two, really two and three are really one, that Yosef and Yaakov are teaching us how to have proper life relationships. And proper life relationships require two things. Number one, for me to be honest about my frailties and failures. And number two, to be willing to put all of the baggage on the table. It's only if we do that that our relationships become transparent. And only if our relationships become transparent are they meaningful and honest. And only if they're transparent, meaningful and honest, with an acknowledgement of all of my frailties and all of my failures, does the relationship have the ability to endure. All right, we'll stop over here. There.